Okay, thank you. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Brad and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Brad.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, courage to change things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the hall over there and above a small flight of stairs. At this time, if you could please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 5, 6, and 7, and I'd like y'all to welcome to our panel this evening, Justin and Joe. Okay, and I will read the first paragraph. If you want to read along in the big book, it starts on page 72. All right, page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they failed. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. We'll start with Justin.
I'm an alcoholic named Justin.
Justin.
I gotta tell you, I'm not usually nervous, but these microphones are really, really intimidating. Can you hear me? I don't know if the microphone's even in the right spot. Yeah, that's great. So, technical issues already, that figures. And I've never spoken here. I've never been privileged to have the opportunity to speak in this format. And it's a little odd to me to just jump right into 5th, 6th, and 7th without having some background to talk about my story. But in brief, the most important part of the reading to me today that Brad just read is the sentence where it says, the best reason first, meaning why we should do the fifth step. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. So I had plenty of evidence that it was important for me to quit drinking. There were sign after sign after sign that I should quit drinking, and I got to a certain point where I tried and tried and could not stop drinking on my own. And so I couldn't drink successfully, and I couldn't not drink successfully, so I found myself in AA. So in taking the first four steps, you know, the first three got me to a point where I understood that there was a higher power, and that that higher power I had accepted into my life, and that was going to help me do something about my drinking. And indeed, it's a whole heck of a lot more than just the drinking, as anybody that's been around here for a little while knows. But when it comes to the fourth and the fifth step, I was scared to death when I came in here and I read your guys' steps up on the walls, and it said that I was going to have to not only write down all this stuff, all this crap that I'd been carrying around for years and years, but then I was going to have to tell someone? Oh my God, what are you guys, crazy? That's the stuff I've been drinking over for the past 30-something years. I thought it was an insane idea. And I remember saying to myself, there's no way that I'm going to tell anyone my entire life story. That stuff was too dark, and you guys would know what an awful person I was. So it was important, obviously, to go through the steps in order, 1 through 3, get that connection with the higher power, 4, do that inventory, and then be ready to do the fifth step, to actually share it. One of my greatest challenges in doing a fifth step was that I could not be trusted for my entire life. And so because of that, I didn't trust anybody else. And so this horrible fear kept me at first from wanting to be able to write everything down and share it with somebody else. God knows what that person was going to do with my inventory. I don't need somebody just not just knowing it, but then having that ammo against me. So I had to have somebody that I could trust. So for me, it ended up being the first time I took the steps, it was with my first sponsor. You know, it took a while to get to the fourth and fifth step because we had to build a repertoire. He had to understand who I was, and in sharing a lot of his story with me, that allowed me not just the acceptance and understanding that I wasn't alone in all of these fears, and indeed a lot of the actions that I had taken while I was drinking, and even the actions that I had taken not while drinking, but that were definitely tied into my alcoholism. So once I was able to be comfortable with the fact that that I had faith in this person, that he wasn't going to just go running out there and blab to the world. But I also understood that most of the world already knew all of the crap that I had already done. You know, I had these fears that people were going to know about my infidelity, all of the stuff that I did while drinking. A lot of people already knew about all of that stuff. And so anyways, having a sponsor, having a great sponsor that was able to share his own experiences with me took the edge off and made it a lot easier to put everything down on paper and then share with him. All right, so, and even when I wrote down my inventory, I remember thinking that there was a whole extra page that I was not going to share with my sponsor, even after I had gotten comfortable. But when it came time to actually go through my inventory, there was a bunch of stuff that I still wasn't comfortable sharing with them. So it got down to the day where I was going to share my inventory, and my first sponsor, we'd actually gone through everything that I had written on the first few pages that I knew I was going to share with them. And then when we got to the very end, he said, "So, is that everything?" And I said, "Yep." And he said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yep." And so he read this paragraph to me again. He said, "We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking." And I remember falling back in my chair and saying, "Okay, well, here's the rest." And I had to share with him the rest. And I don't know if he actually fell asleep while I was sharing that stuff that was so dark, that was so deep, that was catastrophic, that was going to send me to jail or hell or wherever else. But he was not very interested at all. Kind of hurt my feelings. I kind of wanted to start making up some more sick crap that I had done just to see if I could pique his curiosity. The whole point in all of that, though, was that he'd done a lot of the same things. And what I found by sticking around these rooms for a long time is that I'm as sick as my own secrets. Right? If I keep those secrets, I'm going to stay sick. And that continues today. You know, I try and do a regular inventory, and I try and share immediately when there's something that's bothering me so that I don't have to get to the point where I'm bundled up in fear and I have to go through an entire fourth and fifth step again. All right. Is that good time?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Hello. I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
Joe.
I did a double entry into the program. The first time I went was in March of 2013. I went to a 28-day rehab and made it all the way through step 8. In the 28-day rehab. So if you've been in the program at all and tried to work the steps, you can tell that was a half-butted effort. But I did, with the people I went in with, I got the furthest in the steps, so that was really important to me at that moment. And that really kind of demonstrates my attitude when I came in, because it talks about it a little bit later in the chapter about how most of us had grown so accustomed to living a double life, which was completely me. Actually, I think I had three lives. I had my life at work, I had my life at home with my wife and children, and I had my life in the bar, and all three were completely different from each other. And I thought that was normal. But what it was doing was, deep down, tearing me up inside. I once heard somebody say that... that they're in a meeting too. I once heard someone say that alcoholics have an overactive conscience, and that's why we drink so hard, because it's the only way we can live with ourselves is to be drunk on a consistent basis. And that was really true for me, because you know, I had such a fear that you know, Home Joe's world was going to interact with Joe's drinking world. And I also had a fear that, you know, it wasn't as great of a fear that my work world would intersect with my drinking world, because I drank with a few of those guys and I was in phone sales, which has an overabundance of alcoholics. But the fact of the matter, is, I was constantly walking around living in fear of somebody discovering who I really was. And the reason I was so scared is because deep down I completely hated that person. And I figured if I hated him that bad, everybody would hate him that bad. So I'm better off putting up an image and a myth of myself, because that way, you know, a few people do like me, and that's a heck of a lot better than everybody hating me as much as I hated myself. So the second time around, when I went into another rehab, it was a long-term rehab in Omaha, Nebraska, where I lived at the time. It was in a homeless shelter because that was the only rehab I could afford, because I was homeless at the time. And I figured if I'm going to be here, I might as well really be here. And I pretty much surrendered to doing everything that they told me to do. And when it came to the fourth step the second time around, I grabbed my notebook from my 28-day rehab and started working on it, and took that page and converted it into about 10 pages. Sat down with my sponsor, and I was scared, yeah. But I figured, you know, if I'm going to be here, I might as well be here and see what happens. I kind of developed a curiosity when I started working the steps, primarily because step three, after I did that and really did that and started doing that prayer every morning, weird stuff started happening around me, good stuff. And I couldn't really explain it, so I figured maybe this, you know, higher power thing is working. And then I sat down with my sponsor, and we went down to a park, and I can still visualize exactly where it was at, and sat there for like 3 hours going through my life story. And he listened the whole time, and it was the most uncanny, weird experience I'd ever had in my life up to that point, because the entire time I was telling him all this horrible stuff that I had done that I was so completely ashamed of and knew made me a worthless person, he had a look of love and compassion in his eyes. He didn't fall asleep like your sponsor did. And, you know, the more I told, the more he nodded along and, you know, dropped in a few stories of things that he had done. And when we finished it up, it was such a complete feeling of release, because I finally had one person in the world that I didn't have to put up a guard to, and I didn't have to live that double life anymore. So that was kind of my experience with the fifth step at a high level at this point.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
We'll go to page 73 next. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As far as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension that makes for more drinking.
Joe actually hit on that already, talking about the double life. But I'll add to that. It wasn't until I came into AA I heard you guys talk about things like being now I've already forgotten the saying, having inferiority, it's being rigorously honest. Thanks, Brad. I definitely wasn't that. What I found is that what I've come to understand is that my ego and my constant thought of self was a driving factor in every single thing that I did for my entire life. And for some strange reason, I'd had the notion before coming into AA that I was a pretty humble person. And I would have tried to convince you that I was a humble person. And what I've come to find out is I had no idea what the definition of humility was. I didn't know what selflessness was. And honestly, all I thought about was, getting what I wanted when I wanted it, and I wanted it now for my entire life. It wasn't very long ago I spent a couple of hours, and I don't know why I'd gotten into this mindset, but I was reminiscing about the past, and I was trying to think of all of the things, because I had it stuck in my mind that I used to do things for people. And I started thinking about all of the things that I used to do for people. And when I analyzed my entire life about all of these great happenings, these great occasions, there wasn't a single event that I could say, truthfully, that I had done something for someone else without expecting something in return. For my entire life. And it was pretty, it was devastating. It was humbling. And it was really saddening at that point. And that was just a couple of months ago that I was going through that. The great thing about being able to discover that, though, is to take a look at what has transpired since then. I would love to tell you that I'm a humble person today, and that what I can tell you honestly is that I practice humility as much as possible on a daily basis. I don't know that I'll ever be humble. I don't know if that's going to happen. Because I still think of me and getting what I want when I want it, and I want it now, on a regular basis. But that's why we take these steps, right? On the last paragraph, it talked about breaking through and getting rid of the egoism, right? Ego, the manifestation of self, or thinking of one's self. And my normal go-to is to be concerned about me. You know, when I wake up in the morning, it is not natural for me to set off immediately and think of what I can do for somebody else. It just does not happen. Now, you guys have taught me there's a bunch of stuff that I need to do on a daily basis, which includes everything that everything that I've learned through taking the first five steps, right? Going through step four and doing this discovery and doing a complete inventory allowed me to find all of the defects that, oh, by the way, I didn't have any defects when I came walking into AA. You guys helped me get all of those defects. Thank you very much. But if I can practice these, if I can practice what you guys have taught me by waking up in the morning, remembering first and foremost that I am an alcoholic and that I have a choice immediately, and that choice is to either go about my business and continue to think about me and how I feel and think about the things that I want throughout the day. I have that choice. But the other choice that I have is to remember that I'm an alcoholic and that I have a whole set of recommendations that you guys have given me. And that starts with a moment of prayer, a meditation, to ask for guidance, and to think about what it is that's, what are the priorities during the day. And the priorities constantly through the day change. Like everybody that's alive, their priorities change. But my priorities don't have to be about me. They still are sometimes, but they don't have to be all the time now. And at this point, I'm rambling, Joe, so you get it. You got to go.
All right.
Help me out.
So as I was reading along in that paragraph, I was remembering where it talks about the inconsistency is made worse by the sprees. I can remember towards the end of my drinking, the terror I would have the next day when I would wake up. And before that morning drink took over my fear, you know, and I don't know if any of you guys have ever had this, but you know, you go out with the people that you hung out 2 days ago, and all of a sudden they start telling a story about how you did something funny, and you can't remember it, you know, or you have a very vague memory of it, and you try to play along like you remember exactly what it was. When I would have that happen on a frequent basis, when it started happening more frequently, I found myself getting extremely uncomfortable around those people. And within a pretty short period of time, when my drinking went to that level to where I was getting haziness or even complete blackouts on a consistent basis, I found myself quickly going to two places to drink. Place one was at home, because alone I could black out and not worry about having to remember, right? Because I'm the only one that was there. And the second thing I did was I found real people who understood. And basically what that consisted of was people that also screwed up when they were drinking. Because no matter how much I screw up when I'm drinking, they'd done the same thing. Therefore, it made it okay, right? Unfortunately, that group of people isn't the best group of people to hang out with if you realize that you are, you become the people that you hang out with, because they're on a fast trajectory, and it's basically a race to see if I'm going to beat them to the bottom, or they're going to beat me, or if we're all going to die together, getting in the car completely hammered, going to the next bar when there's really no point in going to the next bar because we're just going to do the exact same thing we did in this bar, but we convinced ourselves we're going to have more fun over there. And that sense of camaraderie, ironically, that I had with those people who drank just as hard as I did was what I found in my sponsor and my friends in AA when I started getting sober. Because here was a group of people that had messed up the same things and done the same things I had done. I didn't have to be embarrassed, you know, when a huge regret would come up and I started to get a few tears in my eyes, because they had had those same feelings that I did. And it was okay. The biggest difference between my drinking buddies at the end and my new friends in AA was my new friends in AA were on an upward trajectory. And it would always shock, it totally shocked me when I would get together with a group of guys and there'd be somebody there who I really respected and knew from the program, you know, who maybe had 10 years or 5 years or 20 years or whatever, years sober. And I really was jealous of the person that they had become. You know, they just seemed like a genuine person. They had their stuff going for them, good family life, good career life. And they would tell me stories about their drinking, and they did the same crap I did. You know, and that's the sort of stuff that started giving me hope. And it all started when I decided to get honest with my sponsor and start sharing some of the things I did, and releasing that shame, because it made me part of the group, you know. And it's really hard to explain the fifth step if you've never done it, because it's kind of like, if you've never had a mango and I try to explain to you what a mango tastes like, it's pretty much impossible. But what I can tell you is it's one of the most amazing experiences to be able to, you know, reveal all of your darkest secrets to somebody who understands and has been there, just like your drinking buddies that are, you know, going down the crapper. So, it's best.
The next passage is on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory, and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
I remember reading that paragraph the first week that I was in AA, and it just completely solidified all the rest of your guys' AA mumbo jumbo God spiritual stuff for me. Oh my God, who writes this whack job kind of stuff? Seriously, hand in hand? That's how I thought the first week that I was in here. And then it came time to do the fifth step. And that's exactly what happened. Now, I wouldn't use that same language to describe exactly what happened to me. But I can tell you that when it came time and I could actually divulge all of that crap, like I told you, I had that one extra page of stuff that I wasn't going to share. And I was still kind of tense after I shared all the stuff that I was at that point willing to share. But then once I shared all of the rest of the stuff that wasn't on the real list, it was an unbelievable weight that was immediately lifted for me. And like Joe was just saying, trying to describe the difference in how my mind was controlling and trapping and concealing stuff was an immediate change. Now that somebody knew all this stuff that I'd been holding in for so long, the immediate difference is it's indescribable. I didn't feel like I didn't know what a spiritual experience was. So I could not say at that point that that was a spiritual experience. Looking back on it now, that's exactly what it was. Because there was a change in my ability to not just feel the things that had happened, but the when I tried to control my drinking, I could not. I absolutely could not try it. But yet again, something had changed to the point where it was not of my power, it was not of my doing. The drink problem had been lifted, and now all of a sudden, the ability to share with someone else the stuff that I'd been hiding and holding inside for forever, the fear of who was going to know and what that was going to do to me, was gone. That fear was completely lifted. So I have no other way to describe it but as having had a spiritual experience just from sharing that stuff. You know, when it says we can look the world in the eye, we can be alone at perfect peace and ease. And that's exactly what I can do for the first time in my life, because I could not do that before coming into AA. I could not sit comfortably. I could not sit still. My mind was racing 24/7. Even leading up to this, I was always thinking about something that had happened or projecting in the future the worst that could happen. And all of a sudden, that was lifted from me. I don't know how else to describe it, but as having had a spiritual experience.
Thank you. The illuminating every twist of character. I remember sitting there doing my fifth step, and I was kind of getting warmed up, you know, with the smaller stuff, which is what everybody does, and I think it's actually probably a good way to go about doing it. But then I got to the point where the small stuff was gone, you know, and one of the things I was extremely embarrassed about. And just to show you the magic of the fifth step was when about a year and a half before I had quit drinking, my parents were concerned about me and my now ex-wife's marriage. And so they bought us tickets to a marriage conference, okay, that happened to be in Omaha where I was living. And I picked up a shift at the bar where I worked at that night because I knew I would need some release from sitting in this marriage conference all day long. And So I go bartend, and of course I picked a bar that allowed drinking because that was really the best of all worlds. I could get drunk and I wouldn't have to pay for it. Plus everybody thought you were cool because you were the one serving them alcohol. So get done bartending, and of course I'm exhausted, so I decide to go out with my friends afterwards from the bar and run into this girl that I had been messing around with for a little bit. And spent about 3 or 4 hours doing the things that you shouldn't be doing when you're on a weekend marriage conference getaway. And so the next day, I ended up getting home about 5 in the morning. The next day, we got up at 7 o'clock and went to this marriage conference. And I sat in the conference all day long, learning about how God could come and heal my marriage. And I pretended to be listening, you know, and... After doing that weekend, I felt so horrible about myself because my parents went out of their way to buy me tickets to help them out. And my response to that is to go get hammered and mess around with my wife. You know, what kind of a person does that? And I remember explaining that to my sponsor, and he looked at me and he smiled and he said, "That was the old alcoholic joke. It's not the Joe that you really are and the Joe that you're going to find as you complete the rest of these steps." Because remember that. The things we do when we're drinking are not the person that we really are. It's the things we do when we're drinking that are a result of the fear and the addiction and this program and our addicted minds. It's not our essence. And the beautiful part is we have a solution on how to change that essence. And that relief, I think, was the beginning of the spiritual experience that they talk about in that paragraph. Because it wasn't long after that that I was lying in bed and I felt a sense of peace, almost like, you know, my higher power smiling down on me saying, "Joe, you're forgiven. You remember that story about the prodigal son? That's you. You've returned and I'm throwing a party." You know, and... that was the spiritual experience that happened because I told him that story and others, which were even worse than that of the stuff I had pulled. And I do really believe that had I not went ahead at that moment when I was considering hesitating, that spiritual experience would have never came because I would have been compounding in the effort because I knew full well that in order to do a good fifth step, you had to reveal everything, even down to the deepest, darkest thing that you never wanted to reveal, or it's not going to work. And if I chose not to do that, not only did I not do what the program said, but I lied to my sponsor about doing it. And that would have just created another blockage in my mind, preventing me from being able to move into the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th, and eventually, you know, the rest of the steps. So that was kind of my spiritual experience, and I kind of get chills even today thinking about that experience of moving from, you know, being the person who I condemned and hated and couldn't stand to being a person that I thought maybe there was a chance I could be a decent human being again. So thank you.
All right, back to page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand?
No, I thought we were going to keep reading. My first sponsor used to use the arch analogy in every conversation he had with anybody. I think probably whether they were AA or not. Everything was about building this arch and the cornerstone, every single part of that arch. But we didn't have to take the book down off the shelf. I had my book sitting in my lap the first time I went through the steps, and so did he. And he kept referring to it as we went through doing step five and then getting to step six. And so why do we have to ask if we've left anything out? And we already read just a couple of pages back that if we don't reveal everything, odds are, and I'm paraphrasing here, of course, odds are we're going to go back out drinking. And they say in the book, which was written, you know, when there were not that many alcoholics that had gotten sober already, but enough to have had experiences show that those that did not thoroughly do the inventory and discuss it with another individual would regularly go back out. So, you know, why do they say returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour? And that's what my sponsor allowed me to do is after we got done, after I finished with my fifth step, is he left me alone for a little while. He probably went and got something to eat. But when he came back, we jumped right back into step six and seven. But the idea of having had all of that that weight lifted, of having divulged all of that stuff, is exhausting. I mean, it is thoroughly, physically and mentally exhausting getting that out. And so my sponsor followed directly through the paragraph here. And we actually said a prayer together, thanking God for the ability, for having had the courage to divulge everything. And I think he asked me four or five times if that really was everything. And so why do we have to have these stones properly in place? If we are going to walk a free man or woman through this arch, right? They're talking about the true freedom here. And it's not just the freedom from the drink. And hopefully, you know, I know that when I'd gotten to this point, the drink problem had been lifted from me. I wasn't thinking about drinking at this point. But the true freedom that I got was the freedom from self. You know, at this point, I could clearly see that I wasn't just focused on me anymore. There had been a significant change. And again, that goes back to the spiritual experience. Are we reading that next chapter? Or in that next page? Okay.
Okay. I don't really honestly remember if I did the hour after my fifth step. I just remember kind of being in the daze for a while afterwards, because probably could have been the exhaustion that you were talking about. It was just such a strange, odd feeling, you know, that release that happened. But I did go back, and not immediately, but later that day or the next day, I don't remember. But I remember going back and reading the first three steps again, and then reading the Bill's story again, and it was almost like I had read an entirely different book after I'd done the fifth step. And I think it's because of the principle that more will be revealed. You know, I was able to, up until that point, you know, I admitted that I was an alcoholic, that my life was unmanageable, and I probably believed it at an 80%, but because I was given all my effort, I told myself I believed it 100%. I told myself that I'd, you know, done the second step and came to believe that a higher power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, but I wasn't 100% sure I was insane. And based on what I just felt, I knew for sure that I didn't know the higher power that had just done something inside of me. And I think for the first time, really, I meant step three. And when I read the prayer, you know, build with me and do with me as you wish, take away the burden of self so that I can better do thy will. I actually really meant it instead of just saying it for the first time. So that was kind of my experience of doubling, going back and, you know, seeing if I had missed anything. I think I don't necessarily know that I did, quote, miss anything the first time through, but I sure as heck found a lot more the second time I went through it after doing the fifth step.
All right, I'm gonna. We'll go.
The next reading's on page 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, everyone? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing.
So I was at a meeting a couple of weeks after going through these steps, and my sponsor was there, and I had said something about focusing on getting rid of my character defects. And because, you know, I was trying to get rid of my character defects. That's what I was doing in my mind. And my sponsor pulled me aside after the meeting and he said, "Are you an idiot?" And he was laughing when he said it. He said, I know you're not an idiot. Well, what do you mean you're trying to get rid of your character defects? I said, well, isn't that what I'm doing? I'm getting rid of my character defects. And he said, and he pulled this out. And he said, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. We are now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable. Oh yeah. The whole point here is that this spiritual experience has brought me that much closer to God, to where I can trust that a higher power is going to do those things that I can't do. I hadn't been successful my entire life trying to stop doing the crap that I knew was crap, because I just kept doing it. Right? I felt a certain way, and so I did certain things. Usually drinking helped. You know, it helped to think less about the repercussions of doing the things that I was going to do, or it helped soften the blows of whatever repercussions I'd already had. But drinking helped. It was the ease and comfort that I had had for my entire life. And I didn't have that. And so what was there to keep me from reacting to those same feelings anymore? Well, this higher power is supposed to be there, and I am supposed to be turning things over to this higher power, including all of those character defects. But oh no, I'm going to keep getting rid of my character defects like I've done so successfully my entire life. So it was good to have my sponsor there as I was sharing that. I've got a much greater appreciation for what I can and can't do myself now compared to yesterday, and hopefully, like Joe was saying, more will continue to be revealed, so I'll stop trying to get rid of my character defects.
On the sixth step, my sponsor pulled an end around on me. We put together a list of my character defects, and then we asked God to remove those character defects. And then he started talking about the fact that there's a lot of people that come into AA and then end up leaving before or during the fourth step because it's such hard work, and that it's real important for me to start speaking up at meetings and sharing my experience so far, because the new person who hasn't gotten that far will learn more from a newcomer than they will from somebody who's been in the program for 20 years when it comes to getting to the fourth step and getting through the fourth step. So he suggested that I start going to meetings every day, at least for the next few weeks, and, you know, really make an effort to speak. And so I did that, and about 2 weeks later, he's like, "Let's pull out your sixth step." And so we pulled it out, and he's like, "You notice any of these character defects gone?" And I was like, "Oh, crap, they are." You know, and I think what it was is, when I asked God to remove the character defects and then paired that up with a complete focus on trying to help other people, they just naturally went away. Because a lot of the character defects I had, and I think a lot of the character defects everybody has, are all selfishly oriented. And that's part of the beauty of this program, is we come in, you know, completely self-focused, And, you know, the world is about us. You know, I can remember walking into my first AA meeting pretty darn sure that all 150 people there looked at me as soon as I walked in. You know, and most of the focus was on me. And then after I'd been in the program for a little while, it was like, you know, maybe just the people at my table are noticing me. And then eventually I realized that nobody's really noticing me because they're all thinking the 150 people in this room are looking at them. You know? But the transformation that happens in this program as we move from the person convinced that the whole world's about them to the person who thinks, you know, primarily of, you know, what can I do to help the people that are sick and suffering? What can I do to make my family better? You know, what can I do to serve people at work? excuse me. In that process, we lose a lot of the character defects that we hate in ourselves. And that in turn enables us to be better at everything we do in life, and truly live the 12th step, you know, where we practice these principles in all our affairs and try to help the alcoholic who's still suffering. And the feeling that I got and the blessings I've seen since the character defects started getting removed has been so unbelievable that if I'd have known it when I went to that first 28-day rehab, what would happen, I wouldn't have done all steps in 28 days or 8 steps in 28 days and then made it 6 months before I decided that I probably was just the heavy drinker in the book and started drinking again, you know, and I wouldn't have wasted another year of drinking and taking things to the bitter end. But that's where it had to go with me, and I'm super grateful that it did, because all those experiences now, you know, the fears of coming into the program, you know, and the fear of doing the fourth step and for certainly doing the fifth step, you know, it's all so completely worth it now that it's an amazing program and I love it.
All right, we'll do this last paragraph and we'll have just a couple minutes for each one of y'all. All right. And this is on page 76 too. When ready, we say something like this: "My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." We have then completed step 7.
Yeah, so 6 and 7 are like the shortest steps in the entire book. But I have to do that. I have to go back and review 6 and 7 regularly. I constantly want to take back control of everything in my life. You know, I've got 3 kids. I'm married. I don't have a job right now, so I'm not controlling anything there. So that's awesome. But you know, it doesn't matter what it is. Driving. Somebody that I don't like, working on something, my natural inclination is to want to seize the reins and try and be in control of whatever it is. And I have to constantly reflect on what is useful and what is not. You know, the ability to actually check my own motives is not something that I had before I came into AA. And that's one of the things that these steps have given me is I get to stop, pause for just a second before reacting to something and figure out exactly what it is that needs to happen at that moment. And I don't have all of the answers. And most importantly, I know that I don't have all of the answers. When it says, "I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows," that's a great separation for me. I'm not thinking about just me and how I'm going to get what I want. I find myself more naturally able to think of who I can help, how I can help someone else before just thinking about myself.
Yeah, the it's kind of a strange phenomenon that I've noticed when I'm really focused on helping other people throughout my day, and you know, doing the grant me the strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. You know, just praying for the strength to be able to, you know, endure what I have to endure, to handle the mental things that I have to go through in order to be able to help people. When I'm really focused on doing that, a lot of times people will compliment me on something and I'll have no idea what they're talking about. And I think at first I thought it was strange until my sponsor explained to me that's the case. And when that happens, it means that you're actually being humble, like the program is talking about. In that you don't even realize that you're being humble, because that's what humility is. It's not, you know, thinking low of yourself, which is what I thought humility was when I came into the program. It's just simply not thinking of yourself as much. And I don't know if our higher power created my brain that way or not, but when I'm focused on other people, I finally get peace. And I love the peace that comes with the serenity of this program. And I found that the only way I ever get it is if I am asking for the strength to do his bidding instead of mine, because when I'm focused on my bidding, usually the peace starts to dissipate and I have the ability to bring chaos until I remember that, yeah, step 6 and 7 is important, and I do have to include that in my nightly inventory as well. So.
Thank you, guys. Can we thank Justin and Joe? We're now going to pass the baskets in accordance with the Severn tradition, which states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And at this time, I'd like to ask for any AA-related announcements. Anybody?
Oh, actually, I have
an alcoholic named Justin.
Justin.
Sandbridge 12 and 12 is having their annual potluck this coming Tuesday. Eating starts at 7. It's joint Al-Anon and AA, and there's speakers from both. The speakers start at 8.
Tomorrow or next
That's
week?
Tomorrow. Sorry.
That is tomorrow.
Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Could home group members raise their hands? Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? If so, could you please introduce yourself by your first name? This is not to embarrass you, but that we can get to know you.
Darren, I'm an alcoholic.
Darren, welcome.
Anyone else?
Paul, welcome.
We do have literature available. There's our literature table. The books are have a cost, but the pamphlets are free. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Can we have a show of hands of anyone that's willing to be a sponsor? If you have any questions about sponsorship, you can come up here to the table after the meeting, and I'll answer your questions. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Okay. Can we thank the panel one more time?
Good job, Jeff.
And after we clean up, we're all invited to join us at the meeting after the meeting, which happens at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. And we'll continue our conversation on the step tonight. And could I have someone please read the last couple paragraphs on page 164?
I'm BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And we will now close with the Lord's Prayer.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.